Good morning, church family. Yes, it is a free sermon. No charge. The Word of God is free. Isn't that right? To all who seek, it will be given. And I just thought that was interesting. I won't charge you at the end of the sermon. But this morning, I'd like for us to turn to Luke, the 15th chapter, as we are moving through the book of Luke. And I want to ask you this question, and you might think, well, it's kind of a stupid question because it's obvious, but let me ask it anyway. Have you ever lost anything? You're thinking, yeah, well, I've lost everything at least once, maybe, you know. But what I'm talking about is something extremely valuable to you. Okay, now you're thinking, okay, what have I ever lost that was really valuable to me? All right? I'm sure there's a list of things. And if we went around the room, we'd probably discover that some of us have some things in common. I lost something. I remember when I was a freshman in college. And I was interesting story because it spans about 37 years of my life. There was a time in my life when the only thing I ever wanted was a leather jacket, not just an ordinary leather jacket, but a biker leather jacket. And I wanted a buck knife. Now, I'm talking about the folding buck knife that sits in a little leather pouch, because everybody had those. That was the beginning of the explosion of buck. Everybody had to have a buck knife. And especially if you rode a motorcycle, you needed a buck knife. Now, I know you probably don't have those, and the ninja bike riders don't use buck knives, but they have something else, I'm sure. But that was just part of the dress, you know. And I wasn't making very much money. I was not being paid very well in those days, probably only $1.25 or something like that an hour. And so everything that that I bought, I worked extremely hard for. I slaved away. I was working on a construction crew down in Napa Valley. And so I just saved every penny I could. I rode with a friend to work so I could save gas, and I saved $5, $6, $7. Finally, I had the money that I needed to buy the buck knife. I went down to the knife store and looked at all these knives, and there it was. There was that black leather case with that nice, shiny buck knife with the wooden handle and the brass trim. It was really a nice-looking knife. And I was so proud of that thing, you know. I put it on my belt. You know, other guys had calculators on their belts at college, but I had a buck knife. Oh, yeah, yeah. That designated me, of course, as, well, one of two or three different types of guys on campus, but I won't mention what that designated me as. But anyway, I had this knife, and I went off to college, and I wasn't allowed to really wear it on campus. Every so often I might sneak it under my leather coat, but we weren't allowed to wear those on campus. But when I was off campus, definitely I wore that nice buck knife. And of course the leather jacket that went with it. I went to visit my parents, who at that time lived in Petaluma, California. And, of course, they lived in a very small home. My dad was the pastor of the church, the local church there in Petaluma. And so when I came to visit them, I slept on the couch. And it was an old hand-me-down couch. I think they got it from my grandparents anyways. It was comfortable. I enjoyed actually sleeping on the couch. So every time I'd go visit them, I'd sleep on the couch. Well, one weekend when I went to visit them, I was always very careful to take my leather jacket off and put it nicely, hang it up. And I would take my belt off with the buck knife, and I would also put that on the chair next to the couch. This particular night, I'd gotten in very late. I was very tired, and I just went over and just crashed on the couch. Leather jacket, buck knife, cowboy boots, everything, just crashed on that couch. And I was dead tired, and I slept through the night. I slept a good night. Woke up in the morning and was getting ready to get back on my motorcycle and head back to school, and I couldn't find my buck knife. I looked everywhere. The case was there, it was still on my belt, but the knife was gone. And I was trying to think, now where did I lose it? So I looked around on the floor, I lifted up the cushions of the couch, there was no buck knife there, and I thought, man, did I use it? Did I lay it down somewhere? So I searched the whole house. I turned it upside down. And I couldn't find it. I went outside. I walked around my motorcycle. I thought, man, you know, I know I had it on me when I rode over here because I remember feeling it. And now it's gone. It's lost. 37 years later, okay, I find this thing in the couch. I'm moving my parents' old couch, or actually we're taking it to dump it. And my sister is helping us move this stuff around, this furniture around. She lifts up one end, I lift up the other end, and I hear this something slide, shh, boom, and hits the other end of the couch. I think, what's that? Maybe it's gold. Maybe it's something really precious. So this was an old couch, so I just took a knife and slit the bottom of the couch, and I reached in there, and out comes my old buck knife. Man, I finally found the knife. That precious knife that I labored so hard for, I spent so much money for. I sweated for that knife. I had lost it, and now I found it. So, if you think about something that you have lost, what would be the most important thing that you have lost and found? Now, I have to admit that the buck knife really is not top priority. Because I lost that knife, I gathered quite a collection of knives, quite frankly. And I didn't need that buck knife. But it was exciting to find it again. It was something I'd lost a long time ago. All of us have something in our lives that we have lost. The country, our country that we live in here, is celebrating. You can't really call it a celebration, but we are having an anniversary, I guess you would say, of the 10 years after 9/11. Tremendous loss. People's lives were lost on that day. Huge buildings were crumbled to the ground. Thousands of people lost their lives. Thousands died as a result of this terrible, terrible terrorist attack. And thousands of lives were saved because of people who were willing to rush into the face of death. They were willing to go into the buildings that were burning, the buildings that were crumbling. They were willing to go in to save lives. And they saved lives. Some of them gave their lives, ultimately, as a result of that. I think of another story. As a child growing up in Korea, and I may have told this before, but I want to tell it again because of how it depicts so well the story that Jesus is telling here in the three stories, actually, that Jesus is telling in Luke chapter 15. As a child growing up in Korea, I was right after the Korean War. The whole country was basically leveled by bombing just flattened the whole place. And so they were rebuilding. In the process of this war, many lives many people died as a result of the Korean War. And there were many orphans, many children that were left without family, without parents, without even grandparents, all being killed as a result of the warfare there in the Korean Peninsula. And so one of the things that our mission did was establish a couple of orphanages, and we provided a place for these poor little kids that were without family and without any sustenance, no place to live. You would see them sitting by the side of the road, all dirty, all covered with dirt, no place, no food, no place to go. And the GIs would just pick them up and take them to the orphanage. And this was a regular thing on a daily basis. And we would go over and we would get acquainted with these poor little kids and get to know them. And we'd bring them toys and bring them food and clothing. And I enjoyed those days because I really felt that I was helping people that really, really needed help. There was one particular young lady who, I say young lady, she was just a child, who was living at this orphanage, and year after year, other kids would be adopted, but she was never really adopted by anyone. And so she became actually one of the helpers in the dormitory there for the girls. She was now a young teenager. And one day she got the idea, maybe if I advertised in the local newspaper my name and the names of my parents, that maybe we just got separated, or we got lost in the war, and maybe I'll find them again. So she did that. She sent out several times in the local newspaper. She sent out a message saying, if you are the parents of so-and-so, please call this number. She did that for several months. And then finally, one morning, I remember well, my mother received a phone call from Mrs. Rue, who was the director of the orphanage, said, "Please come up to my office. Something exciting has happened." So my mom ran up and I followed her. I was just a little guy then. And I remember that everybody in this room was just weeping and crying. And I thought to myself, somebody has died. What has happened here, you know? And as a little guy, I was only about 4 or 5 years old. I very well remember this day. And everybody was crying and weeping and hanging on each other. And I thought, wow, this must be terrible. But then I noticed that they were crying, but they were smiling too. And they would cry and they would laugh. And so finally I figured it out after Mrs. Rue introduced my mother to a young couple that was sitting there. This girl had found her parents. I mean, it's a beautiful story of a daughter, a child, who searched in the rubble, who searched in the war-torn country, and found her parents. A beautiful day. It was a beautiful day. It was a day of rejoicing, a day of celebration, and I can remember the joy that we had reuniting that family, putting that family back together after such a terrible, terrible experience that they had gone through. We have here in Luke the 15th chapter three stories that Jesus tells. And these three stories vividly picture for us the wondrous, wondrous grace that God gives us each day. In fact, as you read these stories, you cannot help but identify with at least one of them. So let's just briefly take a quick look at some of these stories that Jesus told. Jesus here tells a story about a shepherd who has 100 sheep, and he loses one of those sheep. Now, that shepherd could have said, well, you know, one sheep, we'll have more lambs this spring, and that'll be fine. You know, one sheep, no big deal. But you have to understand that the shepherd becomes attached to each of those sheep. He has a personal relationship. He calls them by name. He herds them through dangerous areas. He feeds them. He provides water for them. He has a close attachment to each of those sheep. And those sheep, in their own funny little way, they love him too, and they appreciate him. And so, he loses one. And what does he do? He puts the 99 in the fold, and he goes out and he looks for that one sheep. He goes out through the hillsides. He risks his own life to find that one lost sheep. And when he finds it, verse 5, when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and he goes home. And then he calls all of his friends and his neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent." I'm sure that, you know, those of us that come to church on a regular basis, we pay our tithe, we study the Bible, we pray regularly, maybe we don't identify with that lost sheep. Maybe we have never felt lost. Maybe we have always felt at home. Maybe we feel as though maybe we just can't identify with that lost sheep. And the response of the shepherd, he picks that little lamb up and he puts it over his shoulders. And he goes home with that little lamb. Not only does he go home, but he rejoices. He has a party. He calls everyone in and they rejoice because that one lamb. And then Jesus, of course, tells us that when one sinner repents, there is rejoicing in heaven over just one sinner. The next story that Jesus tells us is, well, it's a story of someone who lost a coin. A woman has ten silver coins, and she loses one. Oh, that's just one coin, you know. I'll just work a little harder and replace it. Obviously, though, these coins are significant. I think it's probably important for us to remember, if we look at this culturally and historically, we need to remember that women, when they got married, there was a dowry. We don't do that here in America. Well, I guess we do. Some of the rocks I see on some women's fingers are pretty much dowry. You could sell them and live for a while on them. But in those countries, they received a dowry. And the women often wore those. They wore them on strings around their necks, around their hips. They kept them on their person because, remember, they didn't have banks. They didn't have vaults to put their money in. And so they would wear it. That way they could keep it safe. And so this woman has lost part of her dowry. She probably is thinking, well, you know, if my husband dies, I'm not going to have money. Because see, women in those days, when their husbands died, the money that their husbands had went to the family. It didn't go to the wife. And so often the wife would be left with nothing. And she would be a beggar on the streets. She owned nothing. The women in Jesus' time owned absolutely nothing. All they had was their dowry. And so she lost part of her dowry. And so she lights a lamp. She goes through the house looking. She even sweeps the house out. She goes through the house looking for that one coin. She's got to find it. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over a sinner who repents. It's interesting, Jesus uses the sheep as an example of a lost soul. The sheep are, well, if you've ever been around sheep, they're not all together. In other words, they don't have a full deck of cards. You know, they have to be led everywhere they go, and often they will put goats in with the sheep, because goats kind of have their own will and they kind of do their own thing. And so the sheep will follow the goats. But here you have a coin that has been lost, a bright, shiny coin, something of great value. And there it lies in the dirt and the dust of the earth. There in the mud of the earth. Sometimes in our straying away from God, we wallow in the mud and the dust and the dirt of life. And God looks for us and He finds us and He picks us up, that bright, shiny coin that once sparkled is now tainted, it's dirty, it's muddy, and He wipes it off and He restores us. He restores us to where we once were. I like that. And then the third story. If you can't identify with the first two, here comes number three. Number three has got some beautiful, beautiful examples that I think any of us could probably relate to. In fact, as I look at number three, I see the gospel in the gospels. I see the whole message that Jesus came to this earth to convey to humanity, the grace of God, the merciful, loving God, the caring God, the one who came to this earth to die on a cross for you and for me, for the remission of our sins, so that we might have hope of eternal life. I see it right here in this story. You have the sheep, you have the coins, but now we have the prodigal. For just a moment, let's think about that little home. The joy of father is often the presence of his children. The joy of a mother is being in the presence of their children, hearing their voices, hugging them, giving them a kiss, telling them their cute little fluffies, all the cute little words we use about our children. And you can imagine this father had tremendous love for his two sons. And also it's been said that the joy of the child's home is the communion with his mother and his father. In fact, that's probably what we strive so hard as teenagers to get away from. And then as we get away from it, then we start thinking about, oh, I miss mom and dad. Oh, I miss mom's cooking. Oh, I miss dad. You know, and we start pining over what we've left behind. We try so hard to get away from it, then we want to go back to it. And some of us do go back. You know, one of the things up in Yucaipa is, you know, one of the jokes around town is I'm 40 and living in my parents' garage. I hope not. But the point here is that this family was a loving, kind family. The father and the mother, they love their children. The children love to be in the presence of their parents. And one morning, the youngest son wakes up and decides that he wants to leave. Consider the steps that he must have gone through to get to this point in his thinking. It's hard. Well, you don't have to stretch your imagination too far. But here was this wonderful, healthy family with all of the trappings, the home, the swimming pool, the delicious meals, the nice warm bed, all the things that we think about when we think about our families. This son had to decide in his heart or in his mind that he was going to leave all of that and go out on his own. And so he turns to his father and he says, if you look at verse 11, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate. Give me my share of the estate." Now, it was a given that everything that his father owned was his already. It was already part of his inheritance. But no, he needed to have it separated. He wanted it for himself. He wanted what was his. And so he asked his father, "Give me what is mine. I deserve it. I've worked for it. You owe it to me." Well, isn't that often how it is in our own lives? Sometimes when we talk to God, we act as if He owes us something. Well, I deserve it. After all, God, I've been serving You all these years. So give me what is mine so I can now go out and do what I want to do with it. And so he takes that money and he goes off into a distant land, far away from his home, far away from the influences of his family, his mother, his father, far away from his brother, into a place where he could do his own thing. Where, well, I guess the thing would be where he could find himself. His own personal identity. And we are told, of course, that he spent money and he had everything that his little heart desired. All of his obstinance, all of his self-centeredness, all of his narcissism, he lived it out there in that distant land. Everything he wanted, he got. He had lots of money and lots of friends. And then suddenly he wakes up one morning and the money is gone. He's probably one of those people that says, well, as long as I have checks, there must be money in the bank. Because suddenly now he's without money. Suddenly he doesn't have those things that he desired. Those things that he depended upon to live this opulent life. In that distant land, he had no place to turn. The bank had closed his account. He was already withdrawn. He was already overdrawn in his checking account, and now the creditors were after him. And he goes and looks for a job. The friends have all deserted him. After all, that's all they wanted was the money. They wanted the good times. They wanted the happy ha-ha times. They wanted to get drunk together. They wanted to do all the things that he had allowed them to do with his money. And now suddenly he had nothing. And the only job he can find is feeding pigs. I don't know how many of you have ever been to a pig farm, but it's pretty nasty. I remember when I was in Michigan, we went out to a farm. And they had cows and they had sheep and they had all kinds of different animals. But the farm was mainly, it was a pig farm. And I'd heard lots of stories about pig farms. But it was interesting because the pigs were kept in a little barn, and they all had their own little stalls. And it was really great looking at these pigs, you know, because actually they looked quite clean. Some of them were pink, some of them were gray and pink, some of them were black and white, and they're all different colors, and they had little babies in there, and the baby pigs are really cute. You almost want to take one home, they're so cute, you know. But then you look at the big ones and you realize, don't think I want to take one home. But then we went out the back door of the barn, and here was a huge penned-in area, and it was literally just a sloppy, muddy, mucky mess. And I can tell you something, when they opened the doors to all those little stalls, where did the pigs go? Did they stay there on the nice dry straw and enjoy the good food there? No, they all just like a horde of them just swarmed out, and they ran out there and they all started running and splashing and rolling, and I've been having a great time in this yucky, smelly, I mean the smell was terrible. And they were finding food in the mud. Now just picture that. Here is this young man who was raised in a wonderful home, in a home where there was obviously some money, and the parents cared for him and they dressed him well and all that stuff. And here now he finds himself out in the slop and the muck and the mud of a pig farm. And the only food that he has is the food that he fights over that the pigs are being fed. That's really low. That's like they say, it's lower than a pig's belly. I mean, you're down in the muck. You're down there in the muck with the pigs fighting for food so that you'll stay alive. And one day while he's down there in the muck, he's covered from head to toe. The pigs are fighting with him. He's fighting with the pigs. He's trying to get food so he can sustain himself. And suddenly he looks up and he thinks, a thought comes into his mind. You know what that thought is? In fact, it says right here, verse 17. When he came to his senses... When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am, starving to death." I don't know if any of you have ever gotten to that point in your life, to where you were literally wallowing in the muck and the mire and the mud of this world's pleasures, they call them, and suddenly realize that you had it better. You had it better at home. You didn't have to live in this sloppy, muddy, stinking, smelling pen. That you had a home and you had a father and a mother and a brother who loved you. And so he looked up and he said to himself, "Even the servants in my father's home, even the hired servants have it better than me." You know, a lot of people like to stay in that position, though, I have found. They stay in the muck and the mire and they wallow around and they whine and complain about how bad they have it. And how they wish they had it better. They wish they had it like it was in the old day. And they stay there and they whine and complain. And then they gather around them other people that like to sit around and whine and complain and slop around in the muck. And they look for people. And they go to places where people slop around in the muck of sin and degradation. It's great stuff. You know, this is great stuff. Oh, yeah. You know, and they have hangovers on Sunday, Monday morning, you know. Oh, yeah, but they go back for more the next weekend. It's great stuff. And they'll tell you how great it is. But down deep inside, they know there's a better place. They know there's a better place to be, where people love them, where people care for them. And so, what does it say? Does he stay in the muck and the mire? No. When he came to his senses, and then on to verse 18, he said, "I will set out and go back to my father." I will set out and go back to my father. You see, he had to be self-motivated to go back to the Father. He had to desire in his own heart, down deep inside of his own soul, he had to will himself to go back to his Father. Unlike the lost sheep, unlike the lost coin, the Father wasn't out looking across the country for him. He had to decide that he wanted to change the direction of his life. I don't know if anybody can relate to that this morning. I don't know if there's been a time in your life when you can relate to that. You had to decide that you were going to stop slopping around with the pigs in the pen and that you were going to change your life and go back to your father's home. And so he did. He made the journey. He started the walk. He began the journey back to his father's home. Now, it's interesting at this point that we note that he himself made that journey. That he himself made the decision to put one foot in front of the other. It's kind of like a 12-step, isn't it? 12 steps towards the Father, you see. You had to renew his life. And the only way to do that was to return to the Father. And I love this part here. He got up and he went. And verse 20, halfway through verse 20, it says, but while he was still a long way off. While he was still a long way off, what happened? His father saw him. It doesn't say he saw his father. It says his father saw him. Which probably leads me to believe that he had his head hung low. His back was tired. He was barely dragging himself along on his way back to his father. But his father was waiting. His father was looking. His father was watching. His father was hoping that someday that son would come back. And it says his father, while he was a long way off. Wow. Think about that. Ponder that for a moment. And it says his father was filled with compassion for him, and he ran to his son. God doesn't wait. He doesn't wait for us to get to him, because he's looking for us. And while we're a long way off, he's ready to run to us and to embrace us. A lot of people think, well, you know, you can't go to church to get it all cleaned up. You see, you got to look right, you got to talk right, you got to do all the things right. And then when you have it all cleaned up and you got it all figured out, then God will accept you. Well, that's not what the story tells me here. That's not what it says. Here is the son. He's just pulled himself out of the mucky mire of a pig pen, and he is crawling his way down the road to his father's house, and his father sees him a long way off. He doesn't say, oh, all you servants, please go out and get my son and give him a bath and clean him up so that I can give him a hug. No, the father goes to the son, and he hugs the son. He embraces the son, and he gets covered with all that stinky mud because he loves his son. His son is the most valuable thing that he has. And so the son is welcomed back. So what we have here is we have the lost son. Now we have the found son. The son who the father has found again. And he goes to greet him. And he goes to embrace him. And to welcome him back home. Ponder for a moment. If you can, the record of this son's activities. He asked for what was his. He took it to a distant land, away from the father. Disrespected his family, disrespected his father, his mother, his son, or his brother rather. And he went far away, removed himself. And then he finds himself in a position that he knows that is not right. It's a position that he knows even his father would be saddened to see him in. And so he rises up and he goes to his father. How does that parallel our humanity? the world as we know it, our own lives as we know them? How often do we stray from the will of the Father? How often do we go into a distant land in our hearts and in our minds? And there we find the cheap thrills and the excitement that we've become addicted to. And then we find ourselves in a position that is less than what the Father had in mind for us. And we look up and we say, I need to go back to the Father. To go back to the source of our salvation. To go back to a place where we feel the comfort and the joy of being in the presence of our Father. To go back to a place where we are loved and cared for. It was said that the soul starves whether in riotous living or in want until it looks upward and learns to cry out, Father, Father. There is no food in the faraway land that is suited for a prince or a princess. We are all sons and daughters of God. We are all of royal blood. The price of our eternal salvation was paid on the cross. Jesus Christ died so that all of us could be called sons and daughters of God. And we must, like this prodigal son, we must be willing to say, I will arise. I will arise and go back to my Father. And I can assure you that you will be welcomed. You will be welcomed. The love that descends from God is always greater than the love that ascends to God. I can assure you. The grace of God that rains down upon us is so much greater than the love and the respect and the praise that we offer back to God. The love of a child is only a response to the love of a parent. And those of you that haven't had children may not fully comprehend that. But you can, in the eyes of your own parents, see the love that they have for you. The tremendous love. And so this father received his son back. He planned a party. In fact, some of you might be uncomfortable, but let's look at it. He called the servants to go and get a robe, a new set of clothes, put a ring on his finger. This is Jesus telling the story, by the way. Put a ring on his finger. Verse 25. Verse 24, the last part. So they began to celebrate the homecoming. They began to celebrate that the youngest son had come home. And meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard, what did he hear? Wailing, moaning, music, and dancing. And so he called one of the servants and asked him, what was going on? Your brother has come home. And your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound. There's a big party going on. Fatted calf, the ring on his finger, the beautiful white robe. Yes, the dancing and the music. And verse 28. And what did the older brother say? By the way, this is the older brother is the one who stayed by. He's the one that kept the farm going. He's the one that took care of the old man in his old age. He's the one that made sure all the bills were paid. He's the one that did all the things right. And this is his response to his brother's return. The older brother became angry and refused to go in to the celebration. He refused to go in and be part of the party. And he answered his father. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, doesn't even call him his brother, this son of yours squanders your property with prostitutes and comes home, you kill the fatted calf. Wow. Now, this is the one that did all the things right. This is the one that followed all the rules. This is the one that made sure that everything was done according to law. And yet, this is the one that does not have an understanding of the Father's heart. Because the Father's heart is filled with grace and mercy and love and forgiveness and kindness and humility. All those things. And the older son never saw that in his father. He never understood the heart of his father. I pray that all of us will try our best to get acquainted with the heart of the Father. That we will treat one another in kindness and love and mercy. That we will receive our younger brothers back, welcome them with arms outstretched. Welcome home, children, for this is the place that God has prepared for you. Welcome home, children. Welcome home, children.